Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 118. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, sitting in once again for our David Todd. My co-host is Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Friday, and I take it you didn't go to the parade, did you?
I did not, but I watched from home, and it was just awesome to see at home, so I can't imagine what it was like to actually be there. I mean, you got people pouring out of the parking garage, you got the whole city, you know, just littered with people, and no arrests. So congratulate yourself, Pittsburgh, for not doing stupid stuff. Good job.
Yeah, they didn't burn the city down.
Yeah, it's always a plus.
Anything like that? What did they say? Something like 500,000 people? Or what?
I heard between 325 and 400,000, but at that point, you're splitting hairs. A lot of people. No one went to work that day, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't remember what our traffic was on the site. It seems like Monday was fairly good for us. Maybe a lot of people getting home from the parade, logging on to Steelers Depot. Of course, we all now hope the Steelers can follow suit and have their own parade come February of 2017. That would be a cold one, but I'm sure one a lot of us hoping takes place. And one that, you know, when you look at this roster, very well could take place as we sit here as a team. Breaks mini camp football and short season is now officially over. With that, it's hard to kind of recap something that we didn't see take place. And you know, when you look at media reports, it's hard to judge who did what kind of thing. But I think in the grand scheme of things, Alex, this was a successful, much like surgeries, it was a success in the fact that I don't think really there were any pertinent long-term injuries to talk about. You heard Mike Tomlin talk on Thursday about how conditioning levels seemed to get better as things went on. I think the biggest thing that I took from Mike Tomlin's press conference on Thursday was the fact that the amount of communication that he saw increase, you know, from the time these young kids reported at rookie minicamp to the time mandatory minicamp broke, he saw the communication increase. And I think that's something key this time of year, because let's face it, you know, there's a lot that they don't know about these guys, especially the younger ones, you know, without having the pads on. So what are your kind of overarching, you know, thoughts on the whole off season as a whole, even though you don't have a lot to go on?
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty similar. I think most people would tell you the same. You know, the communication is so key, and to learn these things now, this is really the only time you can kind of slow things down and kind of hold these guys' hands a little bit. Once you get to training camp, it's, you know, green light. You're going and going because you got to get ready for the season. So whenever you have these young guys, they're able to communicate, they're able to take in information, they're not thinking as much, they're going to play faster, and you're going to get a much better evaluation of where these guys are at and how they can help your team this year. So that's really important, and that's great to see. And I think it was Todd Haley in an interview with Missy Matthews that talked about the veteran, you know, group and how they've had so many guys that have been around for so long, and it's kind of helped accelerate this process when you have, you know, your core skill guys be veteran, Ben, Bell, AB, your coaches have been around for a long time, whether that's Todd Haley or James Daniel, Mike Munchak, you know, has been around a couple years now. So I think, you know, you're accelerated this whole process, and it's going to pay off in the training camp. You're going to get hopefully less kind of sloppy play, and you're going to make your team better for it. So, you know, like you said, most off seasons are considered successful across the board for any team, but no big injuries. And you got some good communication, and you made some progress.
And we should probably note that the Buffalo Bills apparently won the offseason.
Rex Ryan said it, yes.
According to Rex Ryan. So Steeler fans will have to, you know, I would think the Steelers probably came in about second or third as far as the offseason goes. Unfortunately, there's no trophies associated with that. And to hear Coach, I bring that up, and hopefully people can detect my sarcasm there. I think everybody wins the off season as long as the attendance is solid and no you know long term injuries are suffered. I think it really is that simple, and it's just funny to hear a guy like Rex Ryan, you know, come out and say something like he did as far as the Bills winning the off season. You know, we kind of talked a little bit about. You know, not suffering any long-term injuries, but let's kind of recap the guys that at least we think missed some sort of time during the off-season program. And I think we'll start, you know, I've got this list kind of sorted, you know, rookies to veteran. Travis Feeney, I'm not convinced that he saw much time during the off-season program. You know, this is a guy that had, what, the sports hernia surgery after the combine. You have to kind of wonder what's going on in there. You know, I don't know, but I did hear he missed some time. I just don't know if that kind of extended into the team's mandatory mini camp or not. Him missing time is big, right?
Yeah. Yeah, you want to get your rookies out there. You want to get them, you know, again, in that process to learn how to communicate, to be able to play fast, because now, you know, there's nothing else until training camp. And once you get into training camp, you know, they really ramp things up. You know, think of if you're a NASCAR fan, think of, you know, the OTAs as like, you know, Bristol or you know, a road course where you're going kind of slow. And now think of training camp as Daytona where you're going 200 miles an hour. It's a big difference. There's, you know, no time to think. And the other big element is the one you mentioned, Dave, is conditioning, because, you know, Feeney's probably not going to be in the best shape because he hasn't gone through these couple weeks. He hasn't been able to work out as much. He could come in the Latrobe in less than ideal shape, and that's a big hindrance. 14 practices, at least open to the public. There's a couple walkthroughs as well. 4 games, that's a big undertaking, and that could hurt him.
Shaquem Phillips is a wide receiver, second year, former undrafted free agent out of Boston College. Is another guy, to my understanding, missed time during during the off-season program here. I think it's a groin. Everybody knows how I like to speculate about groins. I think he may have had some sort of procedure done, and it is my understanding that Shaquem Phillips should be ready to go come the start of training camp. However, as I like to say, don't be surprised if he starts off on the what we call the active PUP list just the same. So that's one name that I've heard floated around out there. I'm trying to go through this list and see if anybody else here. Cinquez Golson, of course, had that kind of that soft tissue injury. I think I saw some clips of him this week moving around on the field. Now, I don't know if that was just individual drills or if he was allowed to partake in team drills as well. But, you know, it's good that he's – if indeed that's true, that he's back out there running around. And I think one of the important things that came to light over the course of the last few days is William Gay saying – that Cinquez Golson is going to come down to the Wide World of Sports Complex in Florida with several of the other guys on the roster to work out with Tom Shaw. And, you know, you always like to hear Tom Shaw associated with guys with the Steelers, because obviously Ike Taylor really – I don't know if I should say put Tom Shaw on the map, but maybe put him on the map as far as Steelers fans go. Ike Taylor trained with Tom Shaw for years, and Ike Taylor obviously played a huge number of years with the Steelers and did so without missing games up until the later portion of his career when he broke that bone in his ankle, you know, kind of later on there. So always glad to hear that kind of thing, especially over the course of these next 4 or 5 weeks. And Mike Tomlin, Mike Tomlin told his team what he does every year, you know, how important the conditioning is over the course of these next 5 weeks leading up to training camp. And it's amazing that how many probably young players don't take that to heart.
Well, I think, you know, you just don't know because you're just a rookie, and then you don't have the experience to realize exactly what – training camp is going to entail, what playing in the league entails, and everyone thinks they're in great shape, but you just don't realize it until you have to go through it. So, you know, it's very important.
You're saying pigs don't know pig stink, right?
Exactly, yeah. It's exactly it. I just got out of being a teenager a couple of years ago, so you didn't know how dumb you were as a teenager. Now you look back and go, wow, I was a stupid teenager back then. I'm still stupid. I'm just a stupid 23-year-old now. So, you know, you have to understand that part. But yeah, they preach it more than maybe any other team in the NFL, Dave. I mean, to Tomlin, Haley, you know, it's all through the offseason. They just talk about conditioning. Be in great shape. It's the number one thing they want you to be in, and they're looking for as we enter training camp. And if you aren't, it doesn't matter what your college tape was, doesn't matter how many interceptions you had, doesn't matter what your 40 time was. If you're not in good shape and you can't, you know, do your last rep as good as your first one, you're going to have a tough time through Latrobe.
Bud Dupree's another one that we know missed some sort of time here during the offseason. Not sure whether or not he was able to get back. Did you see any pictures from mandatory minicamp with him?
Not
in a helmet.
Not recently. He did an interview after practice, but I don't know for sure if he came back or not.
Let's see. Who else do we have on this list? Alex, off the top of your head, I think those are the big names. I think Jordan Zumwalt might have missed.
Really?
I think I heard some rumblings of Zumwalt not being 100% at some point here as well. I think Marcus Wheaton was banged up during this final mandatory minicamp. Nothing serious, if it is, to my understanding. I think the good news is a guy like Mike Mitchell, I think, was back out there working, more so, which wasn't much during the OTA. You always saw him being more of a coach there during the OTA. So the fact that if he was able to get on the field, especially, you know, with those younger guys in the secondary, I think that's big. And if you remember when you know, Mike Mitchell has gotten off to some slow starts at training camp most recently, right? You know, what was it, his first season? What was it, a groin or something?
I don't even remember. He's been so banged up. But, yeah, he spent some time on the active pup to start some of these camps.
So it would be good to see him finally get on the field at the start of training camp and stay there for the full period there. Matt Spaeth, we saw him in sweats quite a bit. And that's not a surprise, being as he's recovering from, what was it, knee with him?
Yeah, this past year was a knee.
Yeah, with an off-season knee surgery with him. Obviously, Sean Swisham has missed time, hasn't been able to kick because of the knee surgery. James Harrison has had a concussed birth certificate. That's nothing to worry about there. Feels like I'm missing a player or two here as well. But nothing that I think is serious here. So overall, like we said at the start of this thing, you have to think this was a successful offseason for the Steelers. Marquise Pouncey did reveal something, though, to ESPN writer Jeremy Fowler over the course of the past few days.
Yeah, you want to talk about injuries and a horrific last couple months for him. Seven surgeries Pouncey went under. Was six surgical procedures and a skin graft. All just really result of complications of his broken fibula that he suffered back in the preseason. We knew that there were complications. We weren't positive on all the specifics, but we knew there was an infection. Melanie, our doctor at Steelers Depot, was able to kind of point some of that stuff out right about that in October. But he had a staph infection, Pouncey did. He had some sort of E. coli infection later on that wasn't as serious as the staph, but still needed to be attended to. It was a really rough time, and we knew that Pouncey had said he had more than two surgeries. You know, he said that to the media, I think, at the start of OTAs, but we didn't know how many it was, and I would have not guessed seven. So he's back in full, though, and that's pretty amazing in itself.
Yeah, and I should probably from all appearances, I don't think he's missed a practice. Mm-hmm. I think they've even tried to give him some time off, and he's kind of declined it. He's just so glad to be out there, and after now learning how many times he had to get some work undone underneath the hood there, so to speak, and you know, it's no wonder that he's glad to be back out there running around. Obviously, Le'Veon Bell's not 100% yet, and in fact, I would go ahead and, for those of you keeping score at home, I'd go ahead and write Le'Veon Bell down as being a guy that's going to start off training camp on the active PUP list because it only makes sense to do that with him. Another guy that we'll have to see, Ladarius Green, the new tight end, obviously, has not practiced any yet. Mm-hmm. And, Ben Roethlisberger talked, I think, this past week about wanting to get his green Ferrari out of the impound yard. And, unfortunately, I don't think that didn't take place during the offseason. You know, have to keep your fingers crossed that he's ready to go by the start of training camp, and there's no indication that he won't be. However, whenever you're in doubt with these guys coming to start at a training camp, I don't care if they've got a hangnail that needs to be removed or not. You need to go ahead and put them on active PUP just in case, because that's your protection in case something should happen that allows you to carry them on reserve PUP once the regular season starts. If you do not put a player on active PUP once at the start of training camp, then that player is not eligible for reserve PUP for the start of the regular season. I can't stress that enough, because this is the designation and the time of the year where people get confused about that thing, about that designation and all. So I think we've kind of hit all these guys as far as injury goes, injury concerns go. So now it's just going to be up to them to get themselves in the best possible conditioning shape that they can between now and the start of training camp, and we'll know right quick who heeded that advice and who didn't.
Yep, you'll see at the end of practice guys that are gassed, hands on hips, doubled over, guys that get pulled out of reps or leave practice early. I remember Cameron Clear last year had that problem where he really kind of slogged through a couple of the practices. And last year was especially brutal because you had 18 practices. You had 5 preseason games. And, it was a big toll on these players. So, the conditioning will be exposed pretty quickly, which guys went to Burger King, during these next month or so, and which guys, really stuck around and really worked their tail off.
All right, what direction do we go next?
Well, I guess we should probably address the Bell rumor that popped up and gave a brief heart attack to us and all of Steelers Nation, right?
Yeah, and that seemed to start or begin to circulate from Mark Madden. And I could probably poll all of our listeners what they think of Mark Madden, and they'd probably be, split right down the middle. I mean, he's certainly got his long-standing group of followers, and then he's got another half that can't stand him. And Mark Madden threw out there, he did classify it, I think, as a rumor right from the get-go that Bell had skipped, I think was the term that he used, a drug test and was facing some sort of, suspension. By the end of the day, a few beat writers had gotten to Bell, and Bell denied that he missed or failed any kind of drug test. And that's really all we have to go on. And if a player is going to deny something like, if Bell has skipped or failed a drug test, I'm pretty sure that probably by the start of next week we would hear it. And B, it would be absolutely asinine. Can I say that on a podcast?
Go ahead.
Asinine for him to for him to do that and then deny it and then get caught with his hand in the cookie jar. So I don't know where all that kind of stemmed from. My view, my opinion on this is that this is before your time. I don't know. You're old enough to remember Saved by the Bell.
Oh, I love Saved by the Bell. Kelly Kapowski, that was my first crush.
I was afraid you'd say something
like
that.
I walked into it.
Dustin Diamond, who played Screech.
Mm-hmm.
How in the hell this is entering discussion in on a podcast? apparently was busted for skipping or failing a drug test over the course of the last week, and being as how Bell from Saved by the Bell and Miss Drug Test showed up in the same sentence on Twitter a few times over the course of this past week, I'm kind of putting two and two together and getting eight And seeing how maybe some people have jumped to he said, she said, they heard, you know, that kind of thing. So until we hear otherwise, you know, me personally, Alex, I don't know how you feel about this. There are players, you know, that I worry about their future when it comes to failing drug tests who have maybe failed some in the past, i.e. Martavis Bryant. And then there's those that I think have learned their lesson, and I would qualify, I would put Le'Veon Bell in that category. I would be shocked, very disappointed if he skipped, failed, whatever, another drug test.
I would be too. I don't know if I think about guys that I think have learned their lesson. I don't know these guys, so it's really hard for me to say. I still allow the chance that Bell could be lying. It's not that it's impossible, but, you know, he's going to be the best source we have right now. We know sources have been wrong before. We know Bell has maybe not had the best reputation before, so they kind of cancel each other out. So you just go on the best information you have right now. There has been no other report since Madden's report about this rumor. I'm sure all the other beat guys have looked into it. Nothing's come of it. So, you know, you assume, you give someone the benefit of the doubt that they're telling the truth, and hopefully they are, because the Steelers cannot afford to lose Le'Veon Bell.
Some will say where there's smoke, there's fire, but I, you know.
That's a thing people can say to not actually have a discussion about it, you know, it's such a cliche and such a throwaway.
And this guy, Sources, is a busy guy. Right?
What's that?
Sources. That guy named Sources. He's a busy guy.
Yeah. Everyone can be Sources. No one has to put their name on it. So, yeah, I see what you're doing there.
I'm not worried about it, but I've been wrong in the past about these kind of things. To me, I mean, and once again, it would be absolutely asinine if he messed with his future right now, because Le'Veon Bell is a player that's entering the final year of his rookie contract. He's set to earn just under $1 million in 2016. If things go the way several of us think they will this offseason, he's going to be a very, very wealthy man with a lot of guaranteed money in his pocket. And if he were to fail another one, he really, really is jeopardizing his long-term, you know, future as far as guaranteed money and career in the NFL goes. It goes without saying. I think that's really an obvious statement there. So speaking of Bell, he evidently said after the Thursday final mandatory minicamp practice that he's kind of waiting to be fully healed this offseason before talking contract. On the flip side, you could probably say that the Steelers are waiting for him to be fully healthy to talk long-term contract as well. This is a horse of a sorts, black and gold horse that we've beaten to death for a long time, but I'm here to tell you, Alex, I still think I will be shocked if these two sides don't come to some sort of long-term agreement before the start of the 2016 regular season. And if they don't, I wrote today that, you know, sort of the risk involved with waiting, and basically it comes down to this. If you wait to give Le'Veon Bell a new contract extension, if you want to wait until after the 2016 season is over, I can almost guarantee you that you will have to put the franchise tag on him if you want to prevent him from hitting the free agent market next offseason. There's, you know, it's cut and dry when it comes to that. Now people are going to say, what is the franchise tag amount supposed to be for running backs next offseason? I reached out to my good buddy Joe Corey, one of the best in the business, and he told me that if the salary cap goes up another 88%, like he expects it to do, he expects the franchise tag amount to be $12.35 million. Once you give any player a franchise tag, whether they sign it or not, that's what they're going to expect their average yearly value of new money to be moving forward. Look at a guy like Von Miller as we sit here right now with the Denver Broncos. He has not signed his franchise tag, nor do I expect him to sign his franchise tag between now and the middle of July. And why is July such an important time? Because July 15th is the 14th, 15th, I think, is the deadline for these guys to sign, or for teams to sign these players to long-term deals who they've given a franchise tag to. If they do not, then that player can only sign a one-year deal, you know, and go from there. So you can bet I will be absolutely shocked that the Denver Broncos do not sign Von Miller to a long-term deal by the middle of July, and I would expect that long-term deal of new money to average more than the amount of the franchise tag is. So go on, how does this all relate to Bell? If you don't sign him now and you have to put the franchise tag on him, you can almost guarantee that come next offseason, the new long-term deal that you give him will eventually be $13 million or more. And there's no guarantee that, you know, and that's just a starting amount, if you ask me. I think with a guy like Bell, if you have the opportunity right now of signing him to a long-term deal that averages, let's say, $10-$10.5 million in new money per season, you need to jump on that as long as the doctors are telling you that knee is fine.
Yeah, that's a great case, Dave. I really can't find any faults in it. Here's my question, my dilemma, I guess, though. You know, I want Bell to get a long-term deal done. I'd love it to be tomorrow. I want it to get done, though, you know, this offseason, and I think he's going to be the second highest paid back in the league. I think it'll be in that, like I said, $9 to $10 million range, just looking at just average yearly value. Of course, is guaranteed. That's actually the real meat and potatoes of the contract. But, you know, $9 to $10 million average yearly value. But if Bell wants to wait, and the team wants to wait, and the doctors want to wait until he's fully healthy, that might not come until training camp. So now you have a pretty limited window, knowing Pittsburgh does not negotiate, you know, contract extensions, you know, once the season starts. So now you might only have about a month to get a deal done, knowing how big this contract is and how complicated it can be and all the negotiating and back and forth that takes place. Do you think there's just enough time to get this deal done?
Absolutely. You could give me one. You could give both sides 1 week.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, because look, the parameters are pretty, the parameters are in place, you know, for the most part. We know somewhere between, it's going to be right around. Are you, let me put it to you this way. Are you going to pay him more than Adrian Peterson makes right now per year? The answer to that probably is no, right?
You're going to try not to, at least, yeah.
Right, right. Now, will he probably want that? Probably. But I think he should expect to come out of this as the second highest paid running back in the league. I think it's a bit much based on his injury history so far. Not that he's injury prone in my eyes, but because of his injury history and him coming off his injury, that he should be comfortable being the second highest paid running back in the league, which would be right around, you know, anything more than $8.1 million, basically.
Well, that's the problem. There's a range there because you're going from $8 million to $12 million. And so you're going to have probably Bell closer to 12, the team closer to 8. So, I mean, yeah, that's a parameter, but it's still a pretty big parameter.
Right, but I think $10 million is, you know, I think you can meet in the middle there. And I think $10 million is a number. If he's going to be – him and his agent are going to be silly enough to stick to wanting – you know, an average yearly value of $12 million plus, basically wanting to become the highest paid running back in the league, that's not going to happen. And they know it.
Unless they just don't do a deal and wait for the franchise tag.
Right, right. And how silly is that?
Well, it might be silly, but there's I'm just saying there's a negotiating ploy to it. That's what agents do. They make things difficult on teams.
Right, but this just isn't Le'Veon Bell. I mean, you could take this with any player every year that negotiates a contract. There's a reality number in there that both sides know.
Yeah, no, I understand. I understand it takes time to finally get to that point.
Yeah, and look, I'm fully expect like I just said, I'm fully expecting Le'Veon Bell to start training camp off on active PUP. I will be absolutely shocked if he receives 10 carries during the preseason.
Yeah.
You going to take an over or under of that?
Man, I might just say he sees action in the third game and that's it. I don't know, maybe a little bit in the game before just to kind of get some of the rust off, but yeah, he'll be pretty limited, I think.
I mean, you know, is there anything to prove?
There's nothing to prove.
No. I mean, basically, you just want to see this guy cut during practice, even if he has to do so in a brace, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to get this deal done in training camp. But I just think it's a little unique because there's a health element and there's a time element to it. I know deadlines spur action, but, you know, I think it's still a pretty big deal. I think there's going to be some back and forth to it. I think there's still a wide range of what this money could be. And I think those are just some of the obstacles that are going to take place in trying to get this deal done.
I don't view him as – I view the obstacle is that knee healthy or is it not healthy?
Well, yeah, but that's the whole point is, you know, he's got to get healthy and then they can start talking, you know, the money. Because, I mean, you had Bell at – didn't this last podcast you said Bell was in that 8 to 8.5 range?
No, I said between 8 and 10. I mean, if you go back and look at the projected contract extension that I put up, this is dated January 19th.
Okay.
January 19th, I have him, where is it here? His new money. I've got a 4-year extension, which is a 5-year deal worth roughly $42 million, with roughly 35% of that being fully guaranteed. Okay, $42 million, you subtract the million that he's set to make this year. So, in essence, it's a $41 million new money. So, what's $41 million divided by 4?
A little over 10 a year.
All right, that's where I've been at kind of all along with this thing. And I'm willing to bet the only question is how can you structure this thing? See, in my example, I put, I think, $12 million signing bonus in here. Obviously you want that signing bonus to be as low as possible, but at the flip side, if you understand how contracts work, he's going to want to earn X amount in year one. Mm-hmm. And by year one, I'm talking about the signing bonus plus his base salary, plus whatever workout bonus, and he's going to, you know, that thing is going to have to escalate. People say, well, how are you able to draw out these deals? Because it's pretty cut and dry that a player is going to want by third year of this deal, you know, by third year of his deal, that's probably going to be what the average yearly value of the contract is going to be, with obviously him earning a good portion of that in year one. That, you know, in other words, that year one portion is going to be a greater percent, you know, highly yearly average than year three of the contract is. That's why I say, you know, I'm not worried if you told me you have 24 hours to make this deal before the team gets on the plane, you know, to go to Washington for that first Monday night game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's already kind of set parameters with this thing, and to me, the only thing that I'm really, you know, the only question is that knee healthy? Now, let's move forward. You know, another problem with not getting him done now and waiting for the franchise tag is, you know, what's the meter going to run up to? Assuming he stays healthy and has a great year. Okay, let's say you put that 12.3 whatever franchise tag on him. What's he going to want after the fact?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're not going to get him for cheaper than that number. We both agree on that, right?
Right, yep.
I mean, that number could be as high as $14, $15 million a season.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the year that he has in 2016. So, you know, if he's healthy, you get it done now, and you just watch the guaranteed money with that thing. Now there's part of the people listening to this podcast that say, I don't care, don't get him signed now. I want to see him play a full season. We'll take the risk with the franchise tag. Can they risk him playing the 2017 season under the full tag amount?
No, I'd hate to do that.
And B, would he want to?
No one wants to be on 1-year deals without that security long term.
So to me, he gets. Do you think his bargaining ability increases by getting the tag next year?
Yeah, probably, because no team likes to have the tag, you know, caught up, especially the Steelers, who are in better cap shape than probably they've been in several years, but still not, you know, just oozing cap space right now. So you try to get those long-term deal duns to kind of give yourself some cap relief. So I think it gives Bell a little bit more power.
And remember this, too. I mean, even though they could probably looking kind of, and it's real tough to do right now, a year out. I mean, that's why they pay Omar Khan to do it, and that's why I get paid to do a podcast, is is the difference of job description here. But I've gotten pretty good over the years of looking ahead and looking at cap situations. But they look like they're going to be in fairly good shape, you know, after the 2016 season. The only thing is you got to remember, you're probably going to have to get a deal done with Antonio Brown. You're going to have David DeCastro in the second year of his deal at that point. You're probably going to have to get a deal done with Stephon Tuitt, right?
Yeah, that'll be coming up the pike.
You're probably going to have to think about Ryan Shazier. You know, at some point, I mean, he obviously, that will be his fourth and final year. So it really, if you pick up his fifth year option at that point, you really get away with not having to worry about Ryan Shazier until the following offseason. Mm-hmm. But guys like Antonio Brown and Stephon Tuitt are pretty big, you know, guys that you're probably going to have to get something done with, that you're probably not going to want to have to worry. And look, Daniel McCullers, he's a name that somebody's going to throw out there, but I mean, whether or not you're going to want to get him locked up, even though if you had to do such a deal, probably wouldn't take a lot to get done. But I mean, let's focus in on Antonio Brown, Stephon Tuitt. I don't think you want have to be out there worrying about Le'Veon Bell having to get this done as well, too. So I guess the long and short of it right now is, now that we're, and we kind of kicked this whole thing off with this Le'Veon Bell, you know, kind of rumor and going from there. If he doesn't fail a drug test or skip a drug test between now and the start of the regular season, and if the doctors tell me that that knee is fine, I don't see how a long-term deal doesn't get done.
I tend to agree. I think I just have a little bit more worry just because of the timetable. And if, you know, as crazy it may sound to you and I, Dave, if Bell wants to wait, he knows that there's a good chance that he can get more money if he waits another year, up to a couple million more per year, and I don't think that should be overlooked.
Let's see. Speaking of Le'Veon Bell, he's dropped a little bit of weight.
Yeah, he told Chris Bradford that he's in the 210 to 215 range. Now, I mean, maybe that's partially because of him working his way back. I'm not positive if that's what his playing weight wants to be, or if he's still working back, you know, coming off the injury and rehabbing. I can't say I guess with certainty, but I bet he's going to probably play at a little lighter weight this year. I think, you know, to be a little bit quicker, to be in, you know, again, better shape than you were the year before, and maybe to take a little bit of pressure off his knees, you know, knowing that his knees have been an issue, you take a little bit of weight off those joints. I'm sure there's going to be a little bit of help there as well. So he probably played last year around the 225 range. It's what he's listed at right now. I think you can expect him to play 5 to 7 pounds lighter this year.
Also, speaking of Bell, Ben Roethlisberger, Todd Haley, some comments, I think, you know, over the course of the offseason, you know, not ruling out the possibility of dual backfield with D'Angelo Williams and Le'Veon Bell and yada, yada, you know, both not ruling it out. Look, you and I can have fun with this all day long, drawing up things that we would like to see out of the pony backfield, such as that. I've done it in the past. I would like to see it done 2-3 times a game, because it at least put it on paper early in the season to give defenses something to think about. But it's not something that we're going to see week in, week out, 4 or 5 times a game. It is an option, though, and one that needs to be explored at least a couple times a game.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not probably as crazy about it as some people. If you're going to do it, it's going to be when you split Bell out. You're going to go with some 11 personnel, and he's going to try to act as your third receiver in. Or maybe you go some 10 personnel without a tight end, you know, and you have, you know, D-Will in the backfield. But I don't think it'll be beyond that. You know, as cool as it is to think of them both in the backfield, when you think of the old pony backfields of Franco and Rocky, the problem you have now is you lose a blocker if you're going to have both those guys in the backfield. You know, Rocky Blyer was still a good blocker. Bell, D'Angelo, that's not what they do. So if you do, it'd be very kind of just a creative thing, very rare. And I think if you're going to see, it's going to be, you know, just treated Bell as a receiver. So it'll be a pony, but it almost won't be in the same way.
You're not old enough to remember the Newlywed Game, are you?
No, I remember a little bit of that. It was on GSN. I used to watch the Game Show Network. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
All right. Well, you know, they always ask, how well do you know your, you know, they were always kind of set up to put these people off in other rooms and ask them how well they know their mate, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing, mm-hmm. and answer these kind of questions. Now, when would Dave most like to see the a pony backfield or a backfield with Bell and Williams in it?
When you would like to see it?
Yeah, what portion of the field, portion of the game? How well you know your
I can imagine you with the big long microphone that they used to have, like the 74,
like Gene Rayburn,
yeah, whatever his name was. Yeah, Match Game. I love Match Game, actually, believe it or not. I'm gonna guess, hold up a little answer here, a little whiteboard. Red Zone late in games or something like that?
All right, congratulations. Yeah. You got a match.
Hey,
right.
This relationship might work after all. We saved it.
Look, and we've kind of seen this before, you know, even though the characters have changed. I've got one GIF saved from a couple years ago back when who was it? Was it Archer and Archer and Dwyer or Rainey and Dwyer?
I think Rainey and Dwyer.
Yeah, and in fact, I think it was the season opening game against Denver that year. It gives you the opportunity to really spread a defense out, I think, in several different ways. And being as how the Steelers would like to see their red zone percentage increase this year, and being as how we haven't even talked about really Ben talking about how he'd like to go for two every time this year, and save that because we're going to talk about that next. But I that's when I think it would be the most helpful for you, in my opinion, to use two running backs. And I'm not talking about doing it every time, but personally, that's when I have seen it work the most. I like how you can create space by flaring two running backs out into the pattern. And as you mentioned, you can always have a guy, you know, such as Le'Veon Bell split out wide, yada, yada. But I think it's something to think about. I just don't think we're going to see something like that as much as maybe we're kind of led to believe. We just talked about two-point conversions. If it were up to you, would the Steelers go for two every time?
I'd love to say yes, Dave, and give you the super hot take, but I'm just too conservative of a person to ever do that. I'm all for doing it some. I don't know how much some is, but I wouldn't have the stomach to be able to do it every single time.
I wouldn't mind it one bit, especially if they could keep. What was the numbers last year? 8 of 12.
I've seen some people say 8 of 11. I think it's a playoff game, maybe in there too. It's 8 of 11, 8 of 12. High rate of success.
Well, if you connect 8 of those, let's say it's 8 out of 12. 8 times 2, if I do my math right, is 16. Even if you hit all extra points, that's 12 extra points. That's 12. Mm-hmm. So 16-12 wins out there.
No, I know.
I think you and after Ben Roethlisberger said what he said this past week, I think Drew Brees and a few of the Saints kind of got on board with that as well too. I think you are going to see more of a growing trend, mm-hmm. of this year. I think you're going to see more teams kind of go for two.
Yeah.
I really really do, and I'm going to go ahead. I think I called. I don't know if I called this shot. On this podcast or on an interview I did this past week, when the Steelers score their first touchdown, in Washington on that Monday night against the Redskins are going for two.
I did. That was, you were talking to Dave Weekly. I remember listening to that. Yeah, that's when you said it. So, yeah, I believe it. I mean, I wrote in that post I did just kind of recapping what Ben said. You could probably see it, I don't know, 25 times this year, which would be, you know, about double of what it was last year. And this team obviously has the potency to do it. We know when weather gets bad, you know, it starts getting December in Heinz Field, there's wind, there's snow, you know, with those weather conditions, it makes extra points that much tougher. So yeah, I think you're going to see it more. You know, Tomlin is basically kind of pioneering it in the NFL right now, being ultra aggressive and going against what the quote unquote book says. And when you convert these things, you kind of really screw things up for the opposing team, because now they got to decide on our next touchdown. Do we go for two, or do we wait? Do we hope that they screw up later down the road? It really kind of makes the coach, you know, make some decisions they're not used to making. And I think that's a good way to throw the other team off.
Kind of wrapping up some other loose ends here. DeCastro said this past week that preliminary contract talks with the Steelers have started. Not surprising one bit. If there's death taxes and a DeCastro deal, those things you can guarantee.
Well, let me ask you real quick though, because I'm a little worried, because the Osemele deals, how much does that throw off DeCastro now that Osemele is kind of, you know, going to act as a left guard in Oakland? He got huge money. He got almost tackle money. Does that have a huge effect on DeCastro?
I don't. If so, it's not going to be noticeable, I don't think. I think this kind of the same kind of deal with Le'Veon Bell and Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson's going to be the top after the ink dries on this thing. Adrian Peterson's still going to be the top paid running back after DeCastro's deal dries. Kelechi Osemele is going to be the highest paid guard still. Did the Raiders kind of complicate things by giving him a deal $11.7 million yearly average? Maybe, but I mean, they are going to do DeCastro a favor somewhere. They picked up his fifth year option. That's $8.07 million a season. So that's the starting point. Okay, we obviously know that's not going to be the ending point. He's going to come out of this thing at least as the second highest paid guard in the league. So that number, in my opinion, is going to fall between 8.3 to 10 million. In the grand scheme of things, that's not a lot to fight over. It's probably going to come in maybe around 9 million. Once again, it's not the average yearly value so much that we need to get caught up with as it is the guaranteed money. And I am not worried one iota about this deal getting done, and I don't think it'll scratch, you know, close to what, you can't control people overpaying other people.
But it does, does kind of change the market a little bit, unfortunately.
Yeah, as long as DeCastro comes out of this thing average yearly value $10 million with a nice chunk of guaranteed, he'd be foolish to ask for $12 million, I guess, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, no, I don't think he's going to ask for 12. I just think it threw a little bit of a monkey wrench and might increase DeCastro's value just a tiny bit.
Now, here's the thing that the Steelers will argue as well, too. Well, you know, also Mele can play tackle. Mm-hmm. David, you up for playing any tackle?
Fair point.
You know?
Yeah, fair point.
Even though it doesn't look like the Raiders are going to use Kelechi Osemele that way, he does have the history there. So, you know, if I'm the Steelers and I'm Omar Khan, I'm saying, look, he has on tape that he can play tackle in a pinch.
Mm-hmm.
You don't.
Right.
It's good. You know, end of story. So if you want to show us that kind of position versatility, which I hope they never have to do, David, you're worth $9 million. Let's get this deal done, and it shouldn't get it shouldn't take a lot to get that done.
It'll get done.
Let's see. Roethlisberger, given the proverbial, a few of these young wide receivers have impressed me this offseason. He's smart enough to not name any names. This is like, even though we can pencil in these guys, Eli Rogers, DeMarcus Ayers, Shaquem Phillips, Kanan Severin, this is we don't have a clue right now, do we?
No, I mean I'm sure Eli's impressed. I think that's what some people have said, you know, as he's worked his way back, and he was impressive last year and the couple practices he got in. That's a guy that's a quick twitch guy. He's going to excel when the shoulder pads are off, when you can't hit a guy like that. I'm sure he's doing well. I'm sure Ayers is, you know, working hard and showing some things. You know, they're kind of similar guys, Ayers and Rogers. So you know, they're saying all the right things. Ben is, and not a big story there.
Let's see. Anything else? Any studies or anything that you did you want to hit on? Oh, Mike Tomlin had some encouraging things to say about Artie Burns this week. And yes, it's coach speak. You know, read into it what you will, football and shorts. But he said Artie Burns really talking a lot, and he's asking questions. So his ability to listen is good. I think Antonio Brown had some encouraging things to say about Artie Burns after going against him in training camp. I think he didn't even invite him to go down to train with him in Miami. And
yeah,
boy, what a great sign that would be, mm-hmm, if we see some. Boy, the fan base would go absolutely nuts over and give us something to talk about over these 5-6 weeks here. If AB was to post video of him and Artie Burns going against each other down in Miami during the offseason. In the grand scheme of things, it's just window dressing, but hey, iron sharpens iron, right?
Yeah, no, that'll be great to have that relationship formed early. And yeah, give credit to AB. He's worked with everybody, whether you're a first-round pick or whether you're Ayers, who's a seventh-round pick, or Eli Rogers, he was a UDFA. He's kind of taken all those guys under their wing to try to make them better. And you talk about a guy that's really for the team. You don't usually associate that with receivers, but AB largely is.
You know, I wrote this on Twitter last night after the 4 or 5 Vine videos that AB put out there just mm-hmm, after the mandatory minicamp finished up. What was it that I wrote specifically? I said, Antonio Brown is always, it seems like he's always working. He's always training. And if it were up to me, if I was a young wide receiver on this roster, he would need a restraining order, literally, to keep me away, right?
Yeah.
I mean, unless Antonio Brown just says, look, I don't really like you, you know, what have you, I would even be willing to give him a portion of my paycheck to tag along with everything that he does. I mean, why wouldn't you?
Well, I think they've been around him a lot. I mean, they really have tagged along, whether it's Ayers and Rogers going to his house. Brown has a great relationship with Shaq and Phillips. They go to the gym together. They've done off-the-field stuff, you know, going to Penn's games and stuff like that. So yeah, they've all built up great, I think, rapport, and that's obviously critical and infectious when you see a guy who's the best in the game at what he does, work as hard as he does. That tells you, you know, whether you're a draft pick or a guy just trying to fight on their roster, that I got to work just like that. Because if the best guy's doing it, then certainly I have to if I want to ever try to get to that point.
That's why I said people would think I would need to be surgically removed if I was one of these kids. And look, we don't see who's there with him all the time. Perhaps a lot of, you know, maybe a guy like Eli Rogers is tagging along with him. But what a great example. Is there a guy that there's not these top receivers in the league right now, there's not one of them that has done such a fabulous job in just this offseason alone not that it needed improving, but at marketing themselves and improving their image than AB has, right?
Yeah, he's going to have a great career whenever he hangs up those cleats. He's got that million-dollar smile. He was on, obviously, Dancing with the Stars, so he opens himself up to a whole new market. Yeah, he will not have any shortage of – he'll always be in the spotlight even when his football career is done.
I mean, when you look at a guy like Julio Jones and you know, some of the other great receivers around the league, Larry Fitzgerald obviously is great with the media and does stuff off the field as well too. But I think all the way around, as far as swaying, I guess what I'm getting at is come negotiation time next offseason, Antonio Brown's going to have a lot of the fan base in his favor, and I think that will soften the blow when and if, God forbid, you know, some sort of holdout needs to take place.
Oh, Dave, we were doing so well in the podcast. Don't mention that kind of stuff to end it.
It's
AB's not holding out.
It's a ways away, but God forbid should it ever get to that point. You can never – I don't think you can blame him should it ever come to that. And hopefully, it doesn't. So any other studies that you're working on? It looks like the NFL and the NFLPA agreed to some practice squad rules, which I think is good for the league. According to former Buccaneers general manager and current ESPN analyst Mark Dominic, he said yesterday – that the expanded 10-man practice squads have kind of been expanded, so to speak, once again. And it kind of comes to, I think now they can have, what is it, four players?
Mm-hmm. Up from two.
Up from two that have at least 2 years of accrued NFL experience. So that's good. And I think the NFLPA is happy about that as well, too. So. Not that they're expanding the overall numbers of the practice squad. I think 10 is plenty, by the way. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think? They can go to 12 to 15, maybe. Maybe that happens eventually, right?
It probably goes up and up. I think 10 is fine. I want to see the active day roster expand from, 45, 46 to the whole 53. I think those are some of the things that might be closer than re-upping the practice squad.
All right, training camp's right around the corner right now. In the coming days, weeks, we're going to start putting up the fund drive, as we do every year, for you to donate to, and hopefully our listeners just continue to blow us away. Last year, I think we kind of hope and expect the same thing this year. So Alex will have a post about that whenever that does happen. We hope that those of you who have listened to the show and read Steelers Depot over the years know the importance and the quality of information that Alex puts up, during the 15 or so practices during training camp. So we hope we can count on your support again when it comes to that. What are you most looking forward to, Alex? Training camp battle-wise, give us a little nugget.
Well, I have to save on the training camp battles because I don't even totally know and got to think about it more. But the thing I love the most is I just love going to the campus, going to St. Vincent College. I mean, I think it's the prettiest place to be. You have the Arnold Palmer airport right next to you. You see the planes take off and land. You're sitting on the bleachers there. The players are right there. You could throw a paper airplane at them. You're with the fans. The atmosphere is fantastic. It's got this very old school feel. I just think it's the perfect place to have football. And so that's what I'm excited about, in a very large kind of scope at it.
I think if you had to name a top five, though, too, it'd be being able to hear some of those coaches out there.
Danny Smith. Danny Smith's my guy. And, his voice will boom across the campus coming up.
Who was it? Rock? Wasn't Rock one of those guys, too, that you got a kick out of last year? Rock? Who was it? Rock Cartwright?
That was Mike Sellers. He wasn't loud.
Oh, Mike Sellers.
He wasn't loud,
Mike
but he
Sellers.
Was rocked up. he was a big dude. He was still freaking huge. I'll be curious to see what kind of interns they have. Alan Faneca should be there for training camp the whole way through, so that'll be cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Mike Munchak kind of confirmed that over the course of the last couple of weeks here that Faneca will be with the team through training camp as well. You got anything, any other kind of nuggets to pass
just,
on?
Just real quick, did article today, and I had this idea for a while, but I finally posted today. Just one thing from Keith Butler you want to see get better, and there's a lot of areas, but one very fundamental area. Five times last year, the Steelers only had 10 players on the field. A lot of that did come early in the season, but one came in the final game against Denver. I think that was even in the fourth quarter. 10 guys on the field. Want to clean that up a little bit. And that blame goes on a lot of guys, positional coaches, players, everyone being alert. That's a big thing from Butler. I want to see zero plays with too few or too many men on the field.
Alex, these next 5 or 6 weeks are going to be brutal.
A little bit.
Folks listening to the podcast, please, and readers of Steelers Depot, please bear with us. Yeah, this is the most miserable part of the season. We're going to do our best to get you things to read. We're going to do our best to get things to talk about coming up as well, too. Alex, I've got something I thought of last night. I said, what the hell am I going to do during this? I need to come up with something kind of new and fresh. I'm going to come up with a series of posts centered around, and I'm thinking about calling it, Why Didn't AB Catch That?
Okay.
And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back through all the targets last year, all the passes targeted to AB that he didn't catch, mm-hmm. and there's not a lot of mm-hmm. them. And I'm going to provide GIFs and you know maybe some still frames. I'm going to try to get through all of them in a several segment of post of. Why didn't AB catch that?
All right, then. Well, I was looking forward to that. I got some cool stuff hopefully coming. Got some film room stuff for Monday. I'm excited. I'm going to do a good film room post on Marcus Wheaton and some of kind of the things I'd like to see in his game. And there's a couple long-form things I'm trying to do. I'm trying to do some interviews with players coming up, a couple pieces on some of the old, you know, pre-Noel guys that I like to do in the offseason. I'm trying to work on a couple things with that, trying to hear back from some people. So we'll still have some good content. But, yeah, it's the toughest part of the year.
Maybe you can do a segment called "Should Landry Jones have thrown that?"
Oh, be nice to Landry.
Or should Michael Vick have thrown that?
Just write no and end the post.
All right, say goodnight, Alex. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow Alex Cazora on Twitter at Alex_Cazora. You can follow my co-host at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate, please go to SteelersDepot.com. Find that donate button. Thanks for listening. We'll be back on Monday talking about something. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.